Great. Well, thanks, Amy, for that great introduction of material about where resilience and the concepts and theories come from. I'm going to talk a little bit about community resilience in the context of public health, particularly in the context of current policy, and ground it a little bit more, building off of that great theoretical framework and constructs, and thinking about where we're going right now as a field and where we originated, particularly in the last couple of years. So let me talk briefly about the resilience in public health. I'm going to talk even more briefly about two example projects. You saw on one of the slides the Los Angeles County Community Disaster Resilience Project, and I'll speak briefly about that, as well as some work that we did over the last couple of years in Washington, D.C., and then just kind of prime the pump for some additional thinking about where I see some of the next steps in research and policy analysis going forward. So, you know, we understand kind of resilience comes from a lot of streams, disciplinary streams, psychology, sociology, urban planning, economics, and the like. But there's also a very real reason why we've started this dialogue a little bit more forcefully over the last several years. We have a world that's changing. It's no surprise to people, certainly, who live in this part of the country that disasters are increasing, at least in their scope and scale, and the time between disasters is getting shorter. But concurrently, we're seeing costs increasing both in terms of economic costs, but also psychological and other health impacts. And new disasters are emerging. We're not just simply talking about these kind of acute events, but we're talking about the long-term sequelae and changes as a result of climate change and other kinds of effects. So all in this context, there's been more resonance around community resilience conversation. But when we started this approach to resilience, we realized that not only were traditional disaster response models not enough, but a lot of our public health models in general were not enough. And so this is kind of a visual from one of the infographics that we developed at RAND to try and compare what's the difference between resilience and a traditional emergency preparedness model. And so what you see on the right is kind of traditional emergency preparedness. For those who've been in the emergency preparedness or response or recovery mode, you know we've been focused a lot on plans. We've been focused a lot on the first 72 hours, the first few weeks. We very much have focused on risk and vulnerability frameworks, which is not a problem, but it misses part of that equation. It misses the asset-based community development. And so we said there's got to be a different way of thinking about the long-term recovery needs and the long-term kind of lifespan of a community. And we learned this from doing the kind of literature analysis that Amy and her colleagues have done, but also really looking at case studies both in the U.S. and globally to look at those overachieving communities side by side and what was making the difference between communities that were able to recover more quickly and at least get back to the same level of self-sufficiency or something better. And it was those communities that could broadly define the way that they approached resilient strengthening, communities that could really leverage assets, and who could think about sustainable development and rebuilding smarter. And so that's the kind of thing that we wanted to inject as we started thinking about what does really resilience mean in the context of public health. Now, many of you are very familiar with this. Many national policies incorporate community resilience. You see it in your own public health preparedness capabilities. If you represent local health departments, you're very familiar with these. You see it in the National Disaster Recovery Framework. And the first place it showed up was in the National Health Security Strategy, which RAND had a part in helping HHS develop. It's going to continue to be there in the updated version, the 2014-2015 version. But now you're also seeing it represented in agencies as far-reaching as NOAA and HUD and other entities. So it's really kind of been part of the fabric and the public consciousness in a policy level and trickling down and up from local and state leaders as well. So it is part of the language, part of the lexicon, if you will. Now, the way that we approach community resilience is thinking not simply about the connection of individuals, which has been a lot of the focus, I think, in the psychological literature particularly, is thinking about individual assets, individual capabilities. But we felt that one of the things that was missing was understanding the community fabric, particularly the organizations that are key in resilient strengthening. And we saw as we started to do these retrospective case study analysis that resilience really acknowledged not only the links between individuals and between organizations, but also between individuals and organizations. So that communities that had a tighter fabric, particularly across government and non-governmental organizations and between non-governmental organizations, were not only better able to understand where their assets existed, but they were able to leverage those networks more effectively and efficiently, not only disaster response and recovery, but over the long term. And this is something that we have understood, at least implicitly, in public health for years in terms of community health promotion. But how do we now transition some of that learning into the emergency management context and vice versa? For so often, emergency management models have been more often top down. And so how do we blend that with public health? And so this is kind of a schematic of how we explain to communities how you might think about linking and how you might think about your organizational ties. We also started to think, and this is part of a scale that we developed as part of our own community resilience measurement, but we talked about this neighbor-to-neighbor reliance and the organizational connection. So it wasn't just enough to have individuals and families knowing something about disaster response and recovery. We have been asking this question for years in the Trust for America's Health and other preparedness surveys, do you have a kit? And that was challenging for two reasons. One is that we haven't really moved the needle with all the money that we put into this. We've moved it from 25% to 27% to 30%, but not much beyond 30%. But also it was important to acknowledge the fact that many communities can't really have 3-day supply of water or food. There are other things that could make them more resilient. So we wanted to expand on that idea of individual preparedness. So the idea that people could rely on each other, neighbor-to-neighbor connections, the idea that you had strong volunteer and kind of nonprofit capacity, but you also thought about this organizational readiness and the strong relationship between organizations. That was very key in how we thought about resilience, and these are certainly things that we ask about in our surveys and our organizational analyses as well. And one of the key parts of resilience as we approached our development of frameworks and partnered with many collaborators around the country is that resilience had to sit at the intersection of emergency preparedness and community well-being promotion. If it didn't, first of all, it didn't acknowledge the kind of public health strengths and capacities that we know mattered. But it also meant that the thinking about emergencies and disasters would be episodic, that they would be resigned to the public health emergency preparedness coordinators that sit in one part of a county health department. I see people nodding their heads, and are really left to their own devices. And when we started this work in really earnest in the last 6 or 7 years, we wanted to help bridge and integrate some of that thinking. And so work that we've done in L.A. with the team in L.A., other kinds of collaborations that we've had, has been really focused not simply on that organizational map of external organizations, but working within agencies to bridge what public health emergency preparedness does and then how it coordinates with the community health promotion folks, the HIV/AIDS administration, the chronic disease prevention folks. How do we think about those intersections? It gives it more robustness and more sustainability over the long haul. It has staying power, but it also means that we're doubling or tripling the assets that you can leverage. The other piece that we've really pushed in our conversations in the U.S. in particular, and this really came from our global analyses, was to think about how resilient communities in their kind of construction and their structure and the system changes that you can make at the community level really drive individuals, communities, and the organizations that sit in those communities towards what we call a resilience mindset. It's this idea that sometimes I think in this country we're moving towards these ideas that risk is on a continuum. And it's not simply about just managing the hurricane or the acute disaster that we're used to that seemingly and thankfully is infrequent, but actually realizing that all of us, for many different reasons, based on capacities, assets, as well as challenges or vulnerabilities in our community, are on a vulnerability continuum, on a risk continuum. And how do you help communities take stock of what they have and build a stronger set of skills? So this idea that if something unpredictable was to happen, I can rely on my community. We have the skills to work together. There are things that we can't know is going to happen, but we can at least foster and leverage our neighbor-to-neighbor connections to do better. That kind of mindset undergirds a lot of the work that we've pursued, and is certainly something that you can over time measure. This is kind of the idea from psychology, sociology, and other theoretical frameworks that resilience is a latent construct, but when you put these pieces together, you can start to assess resilience or adaptive capacity related to resilience. So this is kind of the backdrop, the mindset, the kind of conceptual framing that helped to guide some of the work that we've been able and fortunate to do in partnership with communities. So let me just briefly talk about two example projects. So one is the Los Angeles County Community Disaster Resilience Project, and I think Izita in the crowd from that project. We started that project, I guess, back in 2010, so we've been in the field for about 4+ years, and we're continuing on. This is really a collaborative effort started by the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health in collaboration with UCLA, the Emergency Network of Los Angeles, of course with RAND, Loma Linda University, and Community Partners, which is a clinic-based association. And the exciting thing about the LA project, it was really the first national demonstration project. It still is, I guess, that got its first position in that lifespan to really evaluate whether a community resilience strategy improves the readiness of communities not only to respond but recover from disaster. And as you can see, these are some of the visuals that the county developed based on the kind of the project and the teachings of community resilience. So as you can see, this is a subtle but important shift. It used to be prepare, respond, recover. We've added things like connect. Strong communities can be the key to survival as opposed to water flashlights are the key to survival. We talked early on in the LA Community Resilience Project, shorthand LACCDR, is about really moving from just me, which is all these important things that are still important, preparedness message, household kits, individual readiness. We don't lose that. But we have to move from just me to include we. And so this was the idea that you have to think about community-level training and engagement, social connections, community partnerships at the community level. It's not simply enough to have community resilience to have a bunch of resilient individuals. They have to connect in a fabric. LACCDR tests 4 of our 8 levers of resilience. So you heard Amy talk a little bit about the levers of resilience. We derived these levers through a series of RAND analyses where we wanted to make something that took this conceptual messiness and made something operational. And so what we do in the LA project, what we did in the Resilient DC project, and what we're doing in other communities is to test particularly these middle 4 levers, education, not simply about response, but education about long-term recovery, everything from psychological impacts to social impacts. This idea of not only individual self-sufficiency, but how you create community self-reliance and community connection. Partnership, which really includes the integration of government and non-governmental organizations. Communities that are better able to do that, irrespective of their social and economic start, are able to respond and recover more quickly. This is something that we can change. This is something that we can strengthen. And then certainly the engagement, particularly communities that have plans for their at-risk and vulnerable populations in meaningful ways, that truly acknowledge their assets, are able to respond and recover. We wanted to take stock of where communities started at their social and economic level, but work on things that they could fundamentally change. We want to change poverty. We want to change access to health services, but that's not going to happen overnight. So we focus on these 4 levers. In the LA project, we've done a series of evaluation pieces. So we have individual surveys of households. We use organizational network analysis using a tool called Partner. We developed what we think is the first ever community resilience tabletop exercise, which we fielded last summer, and I think has worked very well in those communities, and we'll continue to field those in LA and hopefully other places. So we're testing different pieces of the levers to see how they're having an impact, at least in resilience-related capacities. Finally, I just want to briefly mention, we have Peggy Keller here from Resilient DC. We developed, based on our work in other communities and our analysis, we developed a unique strategic planning framework called Connect. And I can talk more about that if people are interested. But it's a way of working and entering conversations with community and working through the steps of community resilience building. I want to just call out this idea of nesting and alignment. This is really about not building a completely different initiative, but finding ways to align with your existing programs, capacities, and staff. That is fundamental to resilience. It is not just another initiative. It should be intrinsic throughout your public health and your other community development activities. A couple things that we did in Resilient DC, we started to develop a youth resilience core and have a curriculum around that. Also started to develop tools. We have a tool called Learn and Tell, which really helps communities enter into the conversation and explain it to others through almost a train-the-trainer kind of network-based model. And then finally, just leave you with some questions. I think this is the stage that we're at now, certainly with the LA Project, Resilient DC, work that's happening, I know, for many of you in the Gulf South and New York, other places. What capacity activities are most effective? That's essentially what we're testing in these communities. How can we make sure that these resilience frameworks are central to what government and non-governmental agencies are doing. It fits so much of what they're already doing in social and economic development. There's a place to fit it in nicely where it isn't an overlay. And then how can we take some of these really nice metrics, and you heard Amy talk a little bit about this, is to integrate across agencies and have them be standardized across agencies. It can be done, and that's, I think, where we are now in the conversation, both in the U.S. and globally. Thanks.
Thank you, Anita. We'll take questions at the end.